You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Talking to Death is released weekly, every Wednesday, and brought to you absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts. Listener discretion is advised.
Up and Vanished is taking over Talking to Death for the duration of the new season, season four. This is about a year-long investigation into a missing persons case, a missing woman from Nome, Alaska. Her name is Florence Okpialik. She's 33 years old, and she has not been seen since August 2020. The team and I have been going back and forth to Nome, Alaska for the past year, and we've been trying to figure out what happened to her. If you're an Up and Vanished listener and this is your first time hearing this show, I want to say thank you for coming to join us. And we will be here every week, starting on February 16th, recapping every single episode of Up and Vanished and just giving you the real deal the whole time, playing some raw, uncut audio. We'll be joined by some special guests, some other true crime podcasters. We'll explore the different ways that we as the producers of this show and you all as listeners can somehow work together and bring more awareness to not only Florence Okpialik's case, but the issue of MMIP in general. As we dove deep into this case, the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people was highlighted severely. The statistics are insanely alarming. Actually, Mike, do you have some pulled up right now?
Yeah, I mean, basically what we found out was there was a study from 1979 to 2020 on violent crimes in Alaska. And since 1993, there's been a steady increase in violent crimes, which is the opposite of what's happening with the rest of the country, basically. Homicides, robbery, rape, and aggravated assault. The data also shows that rape is like 3 to 4 times the national average, and aggravated assault is 2 times the national average.
These are scary statistics, and they're not just staying the same. They're not going down. They're increasing. They're getting worse. It's time to really highlight this issue and bring it to the main stage of awareness. And so this is the focus of the next season of Up and Vanished. And we really want listeners to understand the crisis that is happening as we explore Florence Okpialik's disappearance and really try to figure out what happened to her. I want to be as open and transparent as possible this season, even beyond the episodes that you hear in the actual show. There's a part of Up and Vanished that is cinematic, that is a buttoned-up version of what is reality. I like portraying the story that way because I think it resonates the best with listeners. And if it can resonate with you, then I can make you care about this case. But I also want to be able to pull the curtain back a little bit and just kind of get rid of some of the mystique of what goes into making a true crime show like this. What's really going on? What kind of decisions are we making throughout this process that you maybe didn't know about? What didn't you hear in the episode that actually happened that just couldn't fit or didn't make sense that would give you some more clarity and nuance as to why the investigation is going in this direction? It's completely true to say that right now in this exact moment, we are neck deep in this investigation. I think this could be a really cool way to keep you as listeners up to speed on what's going on minute by minute as it's happening and be able to expand your scope of knowledge on this case and find different ways that maybe even you could help us figure this out. This is season 4, and we decided collectively at Tenderfoot that maybe we should give this season a subtitle name. Having been in Alaska throughout the summer with you, Mike, and Dylan, and Cooper, and everyone else who came out there and helped on this show, when we first got there, it was in the time period where it's daylight almost 24/7. And you know, I'd heard about this in movies and stuff like that, but I've never experienced that much daylight constantly. And I will say, you know, landing in Anchorage at 1 a.m. and it looking like it's 1 p.m. is a little bit of a brain buster. And eventually you start to forget that there can even be night. I also found it interesting that when Florence Akpialik went missing in the middle of the night, it would have been broad daylight. And that's just an ironic fact, because when you think about the middle of the night, pretty much anywhere else, you're thinking it's probably pitch black. So one of our producers named Cooper is originally from a tiny town in Alaska, actually a little bit further north than where Nome is. I mean, a very, very small place. I think he said he went to school with like 8 other people. His high school graduating class was like 8 people. I was talking with Cooper a long time ago about what the next case should be for season 4 of Up and Vanished. He pulled up this case of a 33-year-old woman who went missing from a tiny town called Nome, right on the edge of the Arctic Circle, and in a town of around 3,000 people, and they have no clue what happened to her, no body, no evidence, and all these years later, the police have no damn clue what's going on. How does someone go missing in such a small place and no one here know anything? It just didn't seem right. Over the years since Up and Vanished started, we've received in the tens of thousands of emails from other listeners, families, and friends of loved ones who are missing. So a few weeks after I was looking into Florence's case, I was going through this email and just typing in keywords like Alaska and stuff like that, trying to see if there were any other cases that someone had sent me, or I don't know, just any sort of connection that I could make that maybe was already right there hiding under my nose. But I typed in Nome, the name of the town that she went missing from, and there was one email. This woman named Delilah had emailed the Up and Vanished email. I love the podcast. I started listening a month ago, and I'm all caught up on the latest episode in season 3, and I'd like to request you to look into the case of my friend who went missing in August 2020. She's a young Native American, which is why I began listening to your podcast in the first place, and she has a little girl. There are no leads in her case. Law enforcement has made zero progress and lack effort in their investigating. And her name is Florence Akpialik. My first thought is, holy shit, how did we miss this? Well, the simple answer is because there's tens of thousands of emails, but the fact that somebody from her family had reached out just changed everything in my mind. So I was no longer trying to determine whether or not this should be the focus of Up and Vanished's new season. I made the decision right then and there that this is the case. This feels right. And within 2 days, I think, Mike, you and I were on a flight to Oregon, where she lives now, and talking to her and having her unpack what she knows about this case.
Yeah. It started very quickly, and it turned into a lot of plane rides.
from that point forward, we just started talking to one person and then another person, then another person. And eventually, over the course of a few months, we have really fully embedded ourselves in this case and parts of the community. And now we find ourselves talking to some suspicious characters and people that I would consider persons of interest in her disappearance. There's just so much to say about this case, and we've learned so much since the very beginning. And I'm just anxious to get this new season out and rolling for you all to listen to it and experience what's going on in Nome as a listener, and maybe together we can help figure out what happened. I think that if we can shake the trees hard enough in a place like Nome, Alaska, the truth is bound to come out eventually. So every week in the beginning parts of new episodes of Talking to Death, we're going to break down the latest episode of Up and Vanished and really pull back the curtain and just show you everything and put it all out on the table, because we want to figure out what happened to Florence. And we're not afraid to show everything that we got. So please subscribe to Talking to Death and stay tuned for the release of Up and Vanished Season 4 in the Midnight Sun, coming on February 16th. And we'll also have a few special guests that are true crime podcasters, some friends of mine, some experts, who will all be up to speed on these episodes as well, so we can really have deep, nuanced conversations about this issue and try to put our heads together and solve this damn thing. Today's guest is a friend of mine who I met years ago. He's a pretty famous actor. His name is Milo Ventimiglia, and you may know him from the show This Is Us, which he starred in and it was amazing in. Or you might know him from Gilmore Girls, which there are a lot of fans of. He's just such a kind person, and I've known him for a few years now, only because he was a listener of Up and Vanished Season 1 back in the day. He sent us an email years ago while he was listening to Up and Vanished Season 1, and we got on a Zoom call with him, and he told me that he wants to make the concept of Up and Vanished into some sort of scripted TV series or scripted movie, and that he wanted to play me. I'm like, okay. One, I'm not as good looking as you are, Milo, but thank you. I'm flattered. but that's really how this whole relationship started. We talk about his career, how he deals with being a celebrity. We also talk about Up and Vanished and my experiences investigating a cold case and being this fish out of water in a small town. But it's a really fun episode. I think you'll enjoy it. Oh, wait. Before we get to that, I want to announce the winner of the contest we had. A few weeks back, we held a contest on Talking to Death, where if you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on your podcast app, we are going to give away a full-fledged, real-deal podcasting kit. What I wish existed when I first started podcasting in 2016 and was Googling, how do you record a podcast? Well, through years of trial and error, we've figured out what we think is the best setup for you to start a podcast. And we've put it all together for you. A nice microphone, a recorder, the headphones. It's awesome. It's a really sweet setup. So I want to announce the winner. This person's title is Inspired by Pain. Hey, Pain, I've been inspired by your amazing storytelling since episode 1 of season 1, the first show. This show is impeccable because we get to hear how your mind works. If I win, I'd love to do a podcast on mental health, and I'd love for you to be a part of it. I work in psych, and I am in the maybe we're born with it, maybe it's the Sertraline Club. I do take that. Okay, this person seems awesome, and sure, I'll definitely be a guest on your new podcast about mental health. That sounds very interesting and important. This person's username is WooFan519. You won this podcasting kit. I think giving away just one kit feels a little stingy. So since we got some new listeners here from the Up and Vanished audience, which thank you for joining us today, if you want to win your own podcasting setup, then you can do so. All you have to do is subscribe to Talking to Death on your podcast app, rate it, you know, you can do 4 stars, but 5 stars is going to bump you up to the top a little bit. Rate it 5 stars and leave a review. We will pick a winner on the release date of Up and Vanish, which is February 16th, and we'll announce it right here. So stay subscribed so you can get all of the in-depth follow-ups to every episode this season. And hopefully you stick around for Milo's interview in this episode, which is really good. And if you stick around to the very end of the episode, right after his interview, I play a clip from episode 1 of Up and Vanished, a much longer clip that I think you'll find is very interesting and compelling, that really speaks to the tone of this new show and just how intense things are continuing to get while we're still investigating this case. So stay tuned at the end of Milo's interview for an exclusive clip from episode 1 that you can only hear right here on Talking to Death. In the meantime, please subscribe to the show, rate and review it if you want to win a podcast kit. Yeah, without further ado, let's kick to Milo. Hope you enjoy the show.
It's like old-timey radio.
It is. Do you feel like a radio host?
No.
No?
No.
Could you host a podcast?
Probably
not. You could. Do you want to?
I could. I'm not sure I have the personality for it.
What does that mean?
I think to kind of like keep an ongoing conversation, to like keep interest, to keep kind of going. I think, you know, there was a moment when Russ and I were dabbling in it, thinking about doing something. And I was like, I think there's people better suited for it.
Okay.
People better suited for it than me.
Just filling the time, like a whole hour of like, what are we talking about? Are we going to run
out? A little bit.
Do we think we're funny, but maybe we're not?
Kind of. Yeah. It feels a little onerous, but...
Well, we did a little deep dive on you just because I wanted to find all the good stuff.
Yeah. I was going to say, you and I are always like talking about just like some like business and some shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is the first time we were really sitting down.
I know.
It's kind of fucking exciting.
Yeah. Also, it's kind of crazy, though. I mean, we've had fun, but it's always been about, hey, this project and what's the next step?
Yep.
And do we take it here or there? And, you know, not out grabbing dinner and all that stuff. Like
exactly,
casual, right?
Man. Exactly.
So yeah, I'm excited to talk
good
to you
to share
today,
a table with
and
you.
And we'll record it, right?
Yep. Perfect.
So we'll remember it forever.
Perfect.
Your first role, what was it?
First paying gig was Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
That's wild.
Yeah.
And who'd you play?
I played party guest number 1. Exciting, always told story.
Just a bro or what?
I was a kid at a high school party, and then I was walking down the steps with a girl on my arm, and Ashley's freaking out that all these people are around her house, and nobody's supposed to be upstairs, but I of course was upstairs, and so she runs up to me and says, "Hey, nobody's supposed to be up there." And I say, "Relax, Ash, we're just taking a little tour." Actually, the funny thing though, and I laugh and I walk off in my overalls and my hair parted,
wearing
so
overalls
because
in this
it was
character.
1995. Well, 95, dude.
Is that what was cool? I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was very much so. That and like a Pet Boys t-shirt. The wild part is though, I'm cleaning out my house right now, and I found a box from college, and I found the original script from that episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I still have it.
That's badass.
Yeah, yeah. Every job that I do, I hang on to either a call sheet, a crew list, or a script. So I don't know how many jobs I've done in the past 28 years, 29 years in front of the camera, but I've got a script for every job.
That's just pretty cool.
Just one.
Why'd you want to be an actor? Because, I mean, I feel like if I told my parents that, they'd be like, okay, get a real job.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, it's tough. You can be really successful in the middle. You can struggle your whole life, and I don't know.
Well, it's also the odds that you're going to do something significant, the odds that you're actually going to make a living at it. They're against you. So, you know, my parents, they were always really supportive of my sisters and I. And I had 2 other career paths. I was either going to go into the Navy and be an aviator, or I wanted to be a pediatric surgeon. I wanted to be a doctor.
Those are very different. Yeah. A pediatric surgeon. Where'd that one come from?
I wanted to help kids.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I was like, what's the hardest thing? What would mentally, emotionally be the hardest thing to do?
Wow.
The science of like treating children. I was like, okay, cool, I'll do that. Got to college, realized I'm like, I don't think that's in my profession. I don't think that's in my head to do. But then I just, you know, I'd always been into the arts, always been into being on stage and performing. Uh-huh. And my high school theater teacher, she told me, she was like, Milo, you can have a career in this. You can actually like do something.
Your high school teacher told
me. My high school teacher, yeah, Mariana Herrera. She was one that told me, like, you can have a career. You can be a professional
actor. Did you believe her?
Whether I did or not, uh-huh. I it's not that I believed her, it's did I believe in myself.
Okay.
That was the thing that I had to figure out.
Okay.
I believed her when she said it, but I wasn't sure about it within myself.
But yet. You gotta feel that way, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like I had confidence, and you know, in high school I was wrestling, I was doing like student politics, and then I was acting. And then of course schoolwork and whatnot. Uh-huh. And I remember my teacher said to me, are you gonna be a professional wrestler? And I go, no.
That'd been really cool.
That'd been kind of rad,
about,
right?
About the coolest, right?
Yeah, I know. And I don't think I have the size for it. But I was like, okay. And then I just kind of went for it, you know? Passed up the idea of flying jets for the Navy. Being a doctor just seemed overwhelming with a lot of information and knowledge. And I had the heart, but maybe I didn't have the head for it. And then I got into UCLA in the theater program. And I moved to LA, and my parents were... paying for my school, and I had like two jobs, working at a snowboard shop, waiting tables, plus school, plus auditioning, and then work just started going. And then, you know, 28 years later, you're sitting in the middle of a strike.
Yeah.
Thinking about
that's
like,
wild.
Yeah, I know. I went from that
also,
to this.
Also, 28 years, it's a long time.
Yeah.
It's a lot of acting.
It is a lot of acting, man. It is. A lot of words, a lot of characters in my head, a lot of that stuff.
Was there ever a moment where you thought, hey, this isn't going to work? Like halfway through or something, or
I'd say there were two solid moments where I was ready to just like throw in the towel. I was done.
Really?
I started to realize that the business itself was getting in the way of my desire to be an artist.
What do you mean?
You know, you as an actor, you have to get picked. Okay. You have to get picked for a job. You have to get picked to work, and that's. Really,
just because you want to doesn't mean that
just because you want to, it doesn't mean you get a job, and just because you're there and you're showing up doesn't mean that you get a job. You may be the best actor, you're not going to get the job. You know, they may pick someone blonde hair versus dark hair, and it's just kind of the way that it goes. They're not buying what you're selling.
And this, maybe,
I don't know,
on the role, but
I don't know. We could arm wrestle over, man. I'm sure they'd probably pick
you. I mean, I definitely beat you in that, but
but you know, it's like there's no guarantee. So, I think I was at a point in my career at. I think I was in my 30s, early 30s. I'd already had some successes. I had Gilmore Girls come out, had a TV show called Heroes come out.
Mm-hmm. Were you making money at that time?
Yeah, I was making money.
Sustainable?
No, I was making money. I was like, that was the only, so quit waiting tables, working in a snowboard shop when I was 21.
Oh, wow.
Acting's been supporting me since I was 21.
Were you struggling through that period, or were you actually like making ends meet?
No, I was more than making ends meet.
Oh, cool.
Like
I
bought a washer and dryer.
You made it.
I bought a house eventually, picked up another home, something my parents didn't stay in when they visit my sister. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like for all intents and purposes, like I was doing very well. I was having some success. And some freedom, and because of it. But in my early 30s, on the heels of Heroes, I just wasn't working. Nobody was hiring me.
Okay.
And I think people had this probably idea of who I was based on that previous
typecast character. Typecast kind of thing, or what?
Yeah, a little bit, like a previous character. But then I didn't realize I was in a transitional stage as a man. You know, when I was 28, 29, 30, I still looked really, really young. And when I was getting into my early 30s, uh-huh. I think I started to physically change, and it was right before that physical change where nobody was hiring the 20-something-year-old Milo. Uh-huh. And then I kind of started looking at liquidating. I was going to sell my houses. I was going to liquidate stocks. I was just going to like sell a car. I was going to get rid of everything.
And do what?
Take a bag, move to Italy on my Italian passport.
Wow.
Find a farm to work on, and literally just work on a farm for a bunch of years and just like, just get away from it. Because it's one of those things as an artist, uh-huh. You desire to be around other artists. You desire to work. You desire to you know, be a part of a show, a job, a play, anything, but nobody's hiring you.
Yeah.
You know, it fucks with you. It definitely
kind of deflating a little bit.
Really deflating. Really, really deflating. And like, I just had kind of had enough. And so I decided to start to get wrap my head around the idea of liquidating. Mm-hmm. And then once I did, I got a little independent film, actually, that Russ and I produced, and it cost me money to be in it. We didn't get paid for the job.
Okay, just like hey, we're going to put something out there in the world.
It was just something that we were going to do. We got pulled into it But then we ended up doing a lot on it. And then right after that, I got another small independent film, and the filmmaker like didn't want to let her down. I was like, hey man, you picked me. So I'm here for you. I know it's shit money. I know I'm far away from home. I know it's a strange movie playing a vampire in a Connecticut home, and I'm living in the set because the mansion we're filming in, like, but fuck it. You picked me, so I'm here. I'm here giving you my everything. And then right while I was in Connecticut doing that vampire movie, I get my next opportunity, which is an Adam Sandler film. Mm-hmm. Like, randomly throw myself on tape.
Which movie?
This was That's My Boy.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, playing Chad, the Marine.
You were Chad.
Chad.
What's Marine. Chad like? Is he like Chad? Like every other Chad?
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's a meathead. Meathead, Marine. I say Marine in air quotes because you haven't seen the film. You find out he's not a Marine, but he pretends very much to be a Marine. But I threw myself on tape, broad comedy, doing some like wild shit that I hadn't done since my early 20s.
Sounds fun.
It was great. It was a blast. And then the next day, 2 o'clock, and this, I put myself on tape at midnight, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was on the phone with Adam Sandler. He's like, we're going to have a great summer, buddy. It's going to be great. We're going to be in Massachusetts. It's going to be awesome. You're going to have a great time. And I'm like, this is fucking crazy. I was ready to like pack up my bags, get the fuck out, move to Italy on a passport. And now I'm working with Adam Sandler.
Wow.
Yeah. And it just kind of like hadn't stopped since then.
What did Adam tell you when you're working on set?
He didn't say anything. He's one of those guys you just have to like be around. Uh-huh. You feel the positivity, you feel the creativity, and you feel inspired. He's a very wonderful, inclusive, top of his game kind of actor, producer who just, he wants the best from everybody around him, and he gives his best, and he's supportive. Like what I found on that set was I was around a bunch of real forward-thinking comedians, like tons of guys, Nick Swardson, Dave Spade, all these guys. I don't know, Chris Rock was the next summer in Grown Ups 2, but I was around all these like heavy hitter comedians. And when you're on set doing a scene, you would have to have alternate lines. You'd have to have alternate, you know, one-liners. And you'd also not only have to have them for yourself, you'd have to have them for other characters.
Really?
Oh yeah. So like you have to show up. Will Forte was on that. Andy Samberg was on that. Just like a lot of like.
It's a big kind of pivot. Like you're doing improv comedy stuff at that moment.
Totally improv comedy stuff. And like, you know, I'd throw lines out and Sandberg would be like, oh, that's funny. And he'd use it and then make the movie. Nice. And you're like, holy shit, that's kind
of
crazy.
One of you guys.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought. I thought I was one of them.
Okay.
And Sandler would say to me, no, we're a bunch of dipshits. You're a real actor. And I'm like,
wow.
No, I'm one of you guys. Like, no, we're a bunch of dipshits. You're a real actor.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, I'll take the compliment, but also like, no, man, I'm one of you guys.
Did it make you think about that? Like maybe there's another chapter of your life beyond the acting you've done before?
No, because For me, you know, acting is acting. It doesn't matter if you're on something that costs $77 and you're doing it with your friends, or you're on a big Adam Sandler comedy, or you're on a show as serious and heartfelt as This Is Us.
Yeah.
It's all the same. Yeah. You know, you embody the character you're playing, you put your full heart into it, you make them real, you make them believable, and beyond that, have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same. It's all the same.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
After Heroes, they kind of looked at you like Hollywood execs were looking at you as the younger guy, but you were transitioning to an older man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess at some point they realized, holy shit, this guy's getting better looking.
Thanks, man.
And that's how... Or what happened?
There was an executive, guy named Greg Silverman. He was running Warner Brothers Studio Films. His younger brother had been my agent's assistant when I was in my early 20s. So I just kind of knew Greg. When I was working on Gilmore Girls, I'd see him around the Warner Brothers lot. And he was around, hey, Greg, how's it going? Hey, Milo, how you doing? Always like really, really nice guy. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, acting is acting. TV, film, it doesn't matter. So I would always feel like because I knew one of the higher-ups at Warner Brothers Film, maybe I'd have a moment to get an opportunity on a movie with Warners. Wasn't the case. We bumped into each other, I think somewhere around my early 30s. I think I'd gotten home from the Sandler film and I packed on a lot of weight, like a lot of muscle.
Just eating?
just eating everything. Eating a lot, working out
eating
a
like
lot.
Them?
yeah. Eating a lot, that's awesome. Working out a lot, but I just had physically transformed and he had reached out to me. Randomly, he just reached out to me to talk about art or something that he'd seen on my Instagram. And I went to his office at Warner's and we sat down and we were talking about some art stuff. And he was kind of pushing me in the direction of meeting some other fine artists. And he wanted to kind of shepherd that career as a photographer. Mm-hmm. And then we started talking about just film work in the business. And he said to me, he goes, you know, it's great that we're sitting and talking now. You know, you're 33 years old, 34 right. years old. He goes, we couldn't do anything with you when you were in your 20s. He goes, men get much more interesting in their 30s, more complex. There are roles that are better suited for guys like you now. So he goes, it's great that we're getting reacquainted. Did I get a Warner Brothers feature after that? No, I didn't. Did I have a burgeoning art career? No, I haven't.
Right.
But it was also a good reminder that there are stages with regards to being an actor where you are, you know, constantly growing, constantly evolving, and you're never really going to find an end. You just have to find that evolution.
What do you mean an end? Like there is no end game?
In terms of I was going to quit the business, I was going to fuck off and live in Italy.
Okay.
End, right? Like saying,
but that's
hey,
kind of like, I'm not doing this anymore.
I'm not doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. But I think what I learned was to embrace the change of myself.
Okay.
And the roles that I could be playing. It's like, I'll say it, I'll mention it from time to time, like I look forward to playing a grandfather. Hopefully, I'm still acting when I'm in my 70s or my 80s,
right.
You know? And I'll probably be getting like grandpa type roles and that'll be great. Like This Is Us, you know, I was finally playing, you know, a husband, a father of three, stuff like that, you know? Like, did I kind of look at myself and think to myself, oh man, I'm America's dad? No.
Well, you became that.
But I became that. But really, all I was doing was playing a version of my own dad and playing a version of like other great dads that I knew. Like I had a ton of guys my age that, you know, had young kids and I see the way that they were with their or are with their kids. And I remember the way my dad was with me. And I'm like, well, let me just embody that. Let me like drop that deep down into my core, into my soul, into my heart, into my balls and just become that. And thank God we had wonderful writers that could reflect that.
Right.
Because that helps. But then, you know, performance-wise, it's like, just make the words sing. Make them real. Make them believable.
This Is Us. How long was that show running? I mean, a long time. And that was like a really huge show.
Yeah, we did.
Very successful.
We did 6 seasons on that.
Did your fame change from your perspective?
Yes.
Like before and after that show?
Yeah, like...
Give me an example of that or how you realized that the first time.
You know, every, let's say, large job that I've had, you know, and I'll say the kind of touchstones, Gilmore Girls, Heroes, and This Is Us. And there's, you know, of course, other jobs in between, some Sandler films, Rocky Balboa, stuff like that. But when you start getting different people walking up to you on the street, you know, with Gilmore Girls, there's a lot of like, you know, college age, 20 something year old women and their boyfriends. And their boyfriend's like, yeah, I like that show too.
He's like, you know, not bad.
Yeah. But like, yo, man, like Team Jeff.
It's cool, bro.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Heroes was definitely an international crowd. Like, I'd be in Japan and people are like, Peter Petrelli. And I'm like, yeah.
Is that wild?
Yeah. Or, oh, no, wait, actually, even crazier. I was in Turkey. I was on my way to an Air Force base in Incirlik Air Force Base in Turkey on a USO tour. And I was at Ataturk Airport and I saw some guy from like way across the airport terminal. And I was standing in line to go through security. And the dude runs up to me and just looks at me. Like stops right with this, you know, partition. And I'm like, what's going on?
Are you good?
Yeah. And then the guy's like, I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
You're like,
that's all he can say is, I don't believe you. And he's like trying to like get the point across.
Know what to say.
I don't believe you.
And I was like, what do you say?
I was like, hey, man.
I don't believe you either.
No, I was like, hey, man, how are you? Milo, nice to meet you. And like, he was a real, real sweet guy and like shook his hand, but then security line's moving. So I got to keep going. But like, international. And then This Is Us was everyone.
Yeah.
Every age, every race, every religion, everything. Everybody would say something to me positive, enlightening, and also reflective of their own life, which was the wonderful thing about that show was it hit everybody in the heart. You didn't have to be, you know, in your 20s. You didn't have to be in your 60s. You didn't have to, you know, live on an island in the mountains, in the ocean, on land, wherever. It's like you just, you could be anyone and connect to nearly every character on that show. And if you didn't connect to all of them, you could definitely connect to one or two of them and stick around.
Was that fulfilling as an actor to have that positive impact?
Very much so. That's the real goal, is when you understand that your hours on set, your time learning lines, your care of the other actor across from you, your support of the crew that's there longer than the actors are, means it, because it's touching somebody in their real life. And when they're able to vocalize that and tell you about it and even get emotional with it, you're like, holy shit, art has just crossed over to something entirely different. Entirely different, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Did you take that and build your character even more from it? I mean, did you? I don't know. Like, did it propel you in some way, or did it just affirm that this was correct?
I think it affirmed the project. Okay. You know, like how good this project was, and it was good from the inside, which was the special part for us making it. The crew, the cast, the writers, the studio, the network, everybody was very positive with the whole experience. We had hard days, you know, you butt heads with a few people in moments, but everybody was there grateful of the work, grateful of the job, grateful of the opportunity, because it was just so rewarding, and you knew it was giving back in a way that nothing else could match it. So I didn't discover anything new because of it. I was just reaffirmed that, oh, we're on the right path.
Yeah,
we're doing really good work.
So 6 years of this show,
yeah,
you've entered a new level of notoriety just among viewers globally. What's the best and worst thing about being famous?
The best. I mean, listen,
give me a perk. I mean, obviously, the positivity is great.
I was just about to give you the bullshit one. Actually, not the bullshit, because it's really sincere and it's positive, is people smiling at you.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you never really think about it. Like, when you're just kind of out walking in the streets and you pass by somebody, and I'm a friendly person. Nice. I smile at people. A lot of people smile a little bit more.
Not everyone does that.
Not everyone does that. But, you know, you're walking into a restaurant, maybe someone's going to take notice. Maybe if you're trying to get a building permit in Los Angeles, maybe they notice who you are and they don't give a fuck.
Right.
You know, the downside of that, it comes with many interruptions in a day. And they are at times interruptions, but it's also as part of what the job is.
What kind of interruptions?
Oh, just somebody stopping you, somebody wanting to take a photo, somebody.
Okay, just a casual day out is not necessarily.
It's not a casual day
like
out. No. You know, and you know, as nice as it is, an experience maybe for that person when you stack up going out in one given day, and you kind of can't get to the front of the line for your coffee without talking to 20 people.
Yeah.
Like, you have those days where you just kind of want to like just be quiet. You want to be quiet. You want to just like sit in your own head. You know, you could give somebody a coffee order or order a meal or go to a movie and just kind of like sit quiet.
Mm-hmm.
That's just gone.
Gone.
It's just gone.
So what do you do instead?
Smile.
Smile.
Smile. Be grateful. You know?
You ever plan your day differently based on, I don't want someone to take a picture of me over here in these joggers or whatever?
I guess also like always be prepared. Like I was right. Walking my dog in the neighborhood, like rolled out of bed, tossed on some shorts and a t-shirt and a cap. I don't know if that shit matched, but it's like, who gives a fuck? I'm walking my dog. Yeah, dude, my dog. We're, you know, walking out of a gym, you know, super pumped up and like have my shorts pulled up and get snapped and all of a sudden it busts the internet like Kim Kardashian's, you know, back end. But you know, it's like those things happen. It's it's part of the job. It is what it is. And I think it also means that people are paying attention. And if people are paying attention, what is your intention out in the world? What are you going to do? Are you going to be a dick? Are you going to be positive?
Yeah.
You know, I think I always try to be positive. 99% of the time I can be positive, you know, but it's also, there's those human moments. Like this morning, I'm waiting in line to grab a bagel. And I've got my dog, and the gal behind me just reaches down and starts petting him. And I go, excuse me, you may want to ask before you do that. And she goes, can I pet your dog? I go, yeah, go ahead. You can say hi. But like,
right.
I realized in that moment, I'm like, fuck, was that sharp? Like, I think I might have been
like,
a little
sharp.
Say
it again.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, say it again. Yeah, hey, here it is. Oh, the world's
there
mine.
He is.
You know? Yeah, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. It is what it is, you know?
I think you've played... And this is us especially, this very powerful, positive character that had a great impact on people's lives and, you know, the way that they're dealing with their own stuff, which is awesome. And is there any sort of negativity that you see from like haters on the internet or, I don't know, people writing shit about you? And how do you deal with that?
Have a good relationship with the LA Police Department and LA Sheriff Department.
Speed dial or what?
You got friends. Stalkers are real. Like that, it happens. Oh, yeah. I've had people knock on my front doors before. Great.
What
saw
do they want
cameras.
To do? Just see you?
Talk. For the most part.
What do they think is going to happen?
I have no idea. Like, probably like, you know, invite them in and be their best friend for however long the rest of their lives. I don't know.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's interesting being, let's say, on the other side of it. If there's a musician or an artist or an actor, writer, director, anybody in the arts, whatever, athlete that I admire, I see that. I'm always just like, hey, man, I appreciate your work. Hey, I love your work. Hey, I appreciate you and what you stand up for, you know, like anything like that. Like, I just keep it really simple. I've been on the other side of it, but when it becomes this like fervent desire to know and almost intrude in somebody's lives, like I never want to do that, but I can't understand why anybody else would want to do that. But it's the cult of celebrity too. You know, I think people escape their own lives and they create a life. And here's an interesting thing. I'm primarily a television actor, which means I'm in people's homes. I'm in their bedrooms with
them. Is that a factor, you think?
Oh, 100%. You know, and especially
versus
now.
Versus like the theater, the big screen.
Well, especially now.
In your room.
I think now it's changed up a little bit, you know. Everybody can be in their bedroom with Brad Pitt.
Right.
You know, before,
well, not everybody, but.
Well, not everybody. But like, you'd have to, you know, buy a movie ticket. You'd have to go to a theater, leave your house, spend money to go be with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Whereas a guy like me who's on your television every Tuesday or Sunday or Friday or whatever show I'm on, you can be laying in bed. You don't have to change. I love you just the way you are, you know? So I think it's a strange thing where there's a familiarity to primarily television actors, although now it's like everything's on streaming and online and on your TVs at home. So like nobody even goes to the theater, which is sad. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that creates a bit more familiarity and a bit more fantasy fulfillment. So people truly think that I am a part of their world. Not that they know me, but I am a part of their world, you know? Like it would almost be that'd be a funny movie if you had somebody that was like, you know, a fan of some actor, and then all of a sudden, you know, they have these fantasies that this actor is like really in the room with them and like living their lives. Like I bet that shit is real. I bet people totally experience that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're knocking on your door randomly, thinking that we're gonna have a combo today and it's all good, you're thinking something else that's not true, right?
Yeah, totally. But then like when, you know, you're actually confronted with that and like, you know, knock on the door and you open the door and, you know, there's a mom with her, I'd say, early adult son.
Okay.
And she just goes, oh my God, it's you.
So what do you do?
Have a conversation with them.
And then what do you do?
Let them know it wasn't right to knock on someone's door. Mm-hmm. Ask if they're going to be visiting anybody else, whether in the city of Los Angeles.
Okay.
And encourage them to just go to Disneyland, go see some sights, have some good meals.
Do they drive to you from some faraway place?
I have no idea.
But could have. Yeah, maybe.
I have no idea. I've had people with foreign accents knock on my door. I've had all kinds of things. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, you become friends with law enforcement. It's not a bad thing.
Is there any other celebrity, artist, or musician that you're just such a fan of that you would be starstruck by?
I don't really get starstruck.
Really?
No. I mean, I think because no matter what, you know, end of the day, it's like we're all people. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us, we're all the same. 100% the same. There are people I admire. I can't even call one out by name, but I don't think I'd be starstruck. Mm-hmm. I think I recognize the human being first and the artist, athlete, whatever, anything beyond musician second, you know? So mm-hmm. I wouldn't feel struck to walk up and talk to somebody, have a conversation with someone, you know? And even like too, like not even because I am who I am in the business that I'm in, but just like human to human. It's like, oh wow, there's someone that I know. Cool. Mm-hmm. Like I surfed down in Huntington Beach like a while back with a buddy, and there was the US Open, I think the first week, or there's some tournament down there, and saw just like a bunch of surfers, and like I was like, oh there's so and so, cool, food's here, and you know, it's like, you know,
yeah.
But like, am I gonna run up and, you know, talk to people? No. Do I need to make friends with them? No. I can still admire them, you know.
What's the biggest misconception about Milo? Is there one?
I don't know. I don't know what conceptions are out there.
You don't? I mean, I'm not saying that there is any, but like,
I have no idea.
I've never seen them say anything bad about you, but they talk about your life a little bit.
Oh, sure.
They understand the real you, or
I think there's a version that I give to life. It's a very deep reflection of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom and my dad, they raised my sisters and I with a lot of kindness and care. I feel a lot of strength and a lot of heart. And when I'm out in the world, you know, it's I kind of lead with all of that. But I also, in moments, have to remember that in my job, there are a lot of people looking,
yeah,
but not looking because like, oh, hey, that's Milo Ventimiglia, but like just wanting to like dig and claw and like really kind of see behind, you know, the door a little bit deeper, something like that. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I think because of that, it causes me to, yes, still be kind, but I'm also pretty reserved.
Okay.
You know?
Consciously. Like, or,
yeah. Yeah, consciously. Like I have to understand that, you know, however I interact with somebody, that person may remember it. They may remember details. They remember things, and therefore they have information. And, you know, it's kind of like, how do you keep a private life private or personal life personal, mm-hmm. but yet be a public figure at the same time? You know, it's like, it's a dance, But fundamentally, it's like, no, it's like, just be a kind person, be like a decent person, you know, just, there's a version of who I am fundamentally that's always represented out in the world, yeah. You know?
Do you remember how we met, like, a few years ago?
I mean, it was Russ.
It was Russ.
Russ, cold called.
Yeah,
cold called. Yep.
Why did he call us? What was the plan?
Because you guys are talented.
Because
you guys had a story to tell that we thought was fucking fascinating.
Did you feel like you knew me? From listening to the podcast?
No.
Were you going to stalk me?
No, wasn't going to stalk you. No, yeah, I had my big friend call you. That's the first thing. Yeah, yeah, because it'd be a little weird if Milo Ventimiglia picked up the phone and call. I think you had a lot of personality in it. Mm. I think you presented, again, a version of who you are. And right. Then over time, getting to know you, it's like, oh yeah, no, I see what you had to do within, you know, within the walls of Up and Vanished.
Yeah.
But also it's like, that's only this much of who you are. That's only a small portion of who you are. And as time get to know each other, it's like, yeah. Oh shit, no, there's a lot more than just that little bit that you get. It's the same thing with like me, you know, people get a small taste and, you know, an hour of TV once a week, you know, but it's like, there's a whole other human being inside there.
It was cool to me when we first met, you and Russ. You guys mentioned the correlation between Donald and I, my business partner, and your relationship with him.
Yeah.
Tell me about Russ and your relationship and how important that is.
We're pretty much married three times over in business. We've been friends, 25 plus years, something like that, 24 plus years. 24 plus years, yeah. But we share the same goals, but we have different ways to get there.
How so though? He doesn't want to be an actor kind of thing.
He wants to tell stories.
But you guys can have your roles or something.
There you go. We have our roles, you know. It's like he knows that I'm the artist on set.
Right.
He's the guy in the office getting me on set. You know, we have our dynamics. But then fundamentally, like how we get there and when we're, let's say, you know, on a set or in battle or whatever like that, you're like, we're there looking out for one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's closer. I mean, I could be on a set with my actors. Russ and I are still closer because there's a bigger thing going on that we've been doing for years and we've been kind of working on. And, you know, his growth is my growth and my growth is his growth.
Yeah.
Which ultimately kind of like carries into our company, like Deanna, who works with us for now almost 8 years.
She's great.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like any relationship though. It's like, you know, you've got to evolve, you've got to grow. And moments, you know, things are going to be trying, but you also have to understand why this person means so much to you. You know,
and
like,
why is that?
Because I care about Russ.
Yeah.
I care about him as a person. Uh-huh. Like he's my best friend. Like I care about him as a human being. I want to see him succeed. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I will break my ass to make that happen for my friend, not even for me, you know?
Right. For
him. I believe that he feels the same, you know? So it's just one of those partnerships that works.
Yeah.
And you know, you,
is it cool to share that with your best friend?
Oh, dude, it's just great.
Because not everyone has that really, right?
No.
That best friend person that you trusted kind of before all this.
Yeah.
That can be along this ride with you and share it with you.
Yeah.
Right?
It's interesting. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what I see is a lot of actors getting producing partners. Like they just pick one up.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you get some success, you get a deal somewhere and they just pick up a partner. I'm like, I've got one I've been kind of doing life with old dog. Been like doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
Right. For a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So within that, you know, it's comforting.
Yeah.
But it's also like, you still got to get out there and hustle. You got to like work, you know, and where Russ works pretty fucking hard.
Tara Grinstead case. Mm-hmm. You listened to Up and Vanish season one.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about that towards the end? What happened to her? Like,
as it was like evolving.
Who did it?
Real,
what happened to
real,
her?
Real life. Like,
yeah, like the
when
real
Josh
case.
Was on the fucking run and.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of those things where you're kind of like, this is all. I just listened to a story that I did not know about.
Mm-hmm.
And wait, it's still happening.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of unbelievable, like the circumstances of everything and like how it all kind of went down. But then, you know, where you were able to pick up on something talk to your grandmother and then figure out like, oh, I'm going to go to this town. Like, that's bananas.
Yeah.
And then you and Donald like really getting into the shit.
Yeah.
And talking to everybody and piecing things together. And then you guys pretty much like reopening this case. And then it has, you know, a roundup. It's like, that's crazy. Again, art impacting life.
The business stuff we were talking about when we first met was this idea of making a scripted version of Up and Vanished. Mm-hmm. And you were like, I want to play you, Payne.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy, I don't look anything like that guy.
It's okay, man. I could bleach my hair blonde.
You could, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you kind of changed later on and said, I want to play the bad guy.
Yeah.
What was that thought line there? The challenge of it, or?
I think everybody expects, you know, you're an actor who also produces. I think everybody expects mm-hmm. you to jump into what that lead role is. You know, you and Donald investigating, like there were many versions that we had talked about.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Finding other great actors, like, I don't know, a guy like Mo McRae, mm-hmm. play Donald, who's a good friend, you know, me playing you. But it also, I started really kind of look at myself, I'm like, fuck, I'm getting a little older.
Right.
And there was something about you at the time when you were recording that,
mm-hmm.
you were younger, and I felt like there were ideas you had about the world, but then this experience of investigating that changed all that.
Yeah.
And I felt, for sure, like where I was already in my maturity, I couldn't go back to play somebody that was discovering that.
So I had to grow up, what you're saying.
Not grow up.
Kidding.
No. Not
no, but no, I see what you're saying.
But not grow up, but it's like, you know, like I can't, it's not believable to me uh-huh. playing someone that's having that self-discovery,
mm-hmm.
whose life is completely fucking shifted,
uh-huh.
who pretty much grew up in the course of, well, there are five of them, right? Oh, shit, there was 10, 19, fuck, I can't remember how long it is. Listen to the whole thing all in one.
Season one?
Yeah.
Was like a million episodes.
It was a million, it was a lot. But like, you know, there was a lot that I think you had experienced in your journey, you know? And
yeah.
I think where I was, I'm like, I don't know if I can play that character anymore. It's not believable. I don't believe myself that I could play mm-hmm. the guy who's discovering something like you were discovering of
yeah.
yourself, of the world, of the surroundings, of everything. So then I kind of pivoted. And when Russ and I were talking, he's like, dude, you gotta just put on some weight, grow a beard, and play Josh. And I was like, that'd be fucking sick.
He's just fucking with you.
He was fucking with
like
me,
that.
But it was also like kind of a challenge, you know? It's one of those things. Like,
so do you like that sort of, I mean, I feel like it's be the coolest shit ever to become this character, right?
Sure.
Just full commit.
Sure. I mean, I've done it before in a lot of different mm-hmm. roles, a lot of different ways, you know? It's like, it's what's interesting to me, you know? Where am I going to serve the project best?
Mm-hmm.
And then that lead role was like, you know, playing Payne Lindsay. I'm like, I think we could probably get a better actor to play you, you know? I think
better looking or?
1,000% get a better looking actor than me to play you. Yes. I don't know. I mean, I still think it's a fascinating story that needs to be told. And
I mean, yeah, I was like talking to Donald last night and this came. I was like, I'm seeing Milo tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're like, whatever happened to that? I mean, we're all busy. We're doing stuff. And, you know, we kicked it around a little bit, but didn't sell it or anything. But
you know, it's also too, it's like finding the right partners.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and right partners in terms, in this case, mm-hmm. writer.
Yes.
Finding the right writer.
Yep.
You know, because I know we'd had a few different guys that were interested in it and whatnot, but the story that they were telling, just it wasn't selling. The good news is it's an evergreen idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great story to tell.
Maybe it's better 10 years later or something, right?
Exactly. And development is long, mm-hmm. really, really, really long. I mean, somebody was saying to me there was some movie that went into production or was going into production roughly soon that was in a development list of somebody like 15 years ago.
What?
Yeah, some feature film.
That's way too
long. I think my manager was talking about it. Yeah. I'll come up with what it is.
That's crazy.
But development's long. You know, it takes time. And also too, where it's like, you know, there we couldn't do the traditional television script, the television thing with it. It's like, okay, cool, we gotta feature film it. All right, let's find a way to do that. Let's mm-hmm. architect that, see if we can't do that with
yeah.
it. So
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint.
Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
You do a lot of press junkets and stuff, you know, interviews for new shows, movies. What's the question that you get asked the most that you're just like, oh, God? And you answer it nicely, but you're like,
probably the first question you asked about Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Is it?
I think everybody goes back to it, yeah.
They're like, oh, this is so crazy.
No, but what was great about it was literally last night, I'm in my garage ripping the fucker apart, cool. And I find the script. I'm like, this is new. This is something new.
Uh-huh.
And the story never gets old. It's just, it's one of those things, you know, anybody does some research online, they do some deep diving, like that pops up. And I get it. And I fucking 1,000% understand.
Right.
It. You know, so it doesn't get old, but it's also like,
You're like, good one. Yeah.
No, not
at
all.
Find that. Yeah.
No, it's okay. It's probably like the very first thing on Wikipedia.
Actually, it is. Yeah, I think
it is. I bet it is.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
They made sure to add that, didn't they?
They have to.
Yeah, because it starts there.
First paid gig, work with Will Smith.
Obviously, that's in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gilmore Girls is a big thing. Maybe they have like a cult like following.
They do.
Do you get tired of being asked those questions?
And, not at all, man.
Or are you just afraid to answer that because you don't want them to come after you?
No, not at all. It's not quite like a, you know, Taylor Swift posse.
Right.
But they are diehard fans.
Yeah.
Like a couple nights ago, I was out getting some food. I was at this restaurant, little spot in Santa Monica, Good Noodles, called Blossom. It's a pho restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting outside and walking past was a director that I'd worked with on This Is Us. He had done a ton of episodes. Really sweet guy named Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I saw his wife and oldest daughter walk first, but they didn't recognize me. And then I see Chris and his younger daughter walk past. I'm like, Chris, he's like, hey, and we stop. We're talking, meet his younger daughter, you know, give hugs, hello, see in the neighborhood, and he walks off. So then get back to my soup. And then like he walks back and he goes, hey, so my older daughter wanted to meet you. And like his older daughter's like, not breathing. She's just not breathing at
like,
all.
Check on your daughter, dude.
Okay. No, pretty much. Yeah. She's just like, Gilmore Girls. It's my favorite show. And I'm like, cool. How many times have you seen the entire season all the way through? Seven seasons all the way through. She's like, four.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
You're like, those numbers are low.
Comparatively, I've heard some people been seven, eight, nine times through all seven seasons, which is bananas.
Damn.
I don't have they must not work.
Dude, no, don't work. Their TV is broken.
You were about
now.
To say no judgment. No judgment, man. Like judgment.
Yeah, no, that one is like, that's judgment. Too much. So there's something wrong. We should talk about this.
Either that or it's pure comfort food. And that you can't.
It's probably that.
I'll bet it's that.
You're looking at one over there who's.
It's comfort food, right?
When I first brought up your name years ago, she was like, oh my God, the guy from Gilmore Girls? I was like, I don't know. And I was like, oh, it looks like him. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Then she showed me and proceeded to show me a lot of episodes.
Oh, yeah. Dude, last night, I found the Jess's leather jacket.
Really?
Like his leather. See, yeah, you know exactly what we're talking about.
I was like, okay. Like, what's that one?
Yeah, no, it wasn't an episode. It's just there was like this leather jacket that Jess wore that became like Jess's leather jacket. Super iconic. I have it. I found it last night. It was like in a bin at my house in the garage. Yeah, I found like all these random costume shit. I was like, oh, interesting.
It's like that role was one of those things where people might know you from that or started there.
Yeah.
My personal favorite of yours, which I want to know how you were able to get into this character.
Can't wait, man.
Because it's just the level of, I mean, I'll find it. Hold on.
Oh, you're going to give me a photo?
I'm going to play a clip from it.
Oh. Oh, this is Fergie, Big Girls Don't Cry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. The best part is, la, na, da, da, when, oh, wow, that was me? Oh, crazy.
It looks like
I look more like you, man. I was covered in tattoos.
This is a badass dude right here.
Yeah.
That's drug, a bad boy
he was a drug dealer.
Oh, shit.
He was dealing drugs. He was doing some, like, bad stuff. He wasn't too nice to Stacy.
No.
No, he was not. She's lovely, though.
I bet she is.
She's super, super kind. I don't even know how they came up. I just got a phone call, I think, from my manager. Like, hey, Fergie wants to put you in a music video. And I was like, all right.
You say yes to that.
Of course. I think, but I was a little more like, all right. Like, how? Why? I don't get it. Why me? Why? You know, yeah. I know who Fergie is. I knew a boyfriend at the time, or maybe were they married? Josh Dumal? Because we were both doing shows on NBC. But then, yeah, I just showed up and, like, you know, one day got all these tattoos put on me and, you know, dealing drugs and hanging out with Fergie and just, you know, she'd never really done anything performative like that.
Okay, like an acting part. In
yeah,
a music
yeah,
video
yeah.
Sort of
yeah,
thing.
And, like, she was great. You know, she was great, but also, like, had to sing and do all that stuff, too. Uh-huh. And she's wonderful. Yeah.
Tell me about your...
Getting into the role? That one?
Yeah.
Hard to believe it. I was dealing drugs earlier in the day.
So. I mean, you're a method actor for that one?
Yeah. Yeah,
you got totally. To go sling some dough for a little bit?
Yeah, totally. Sit in a chair a few hours and some tattoos.
Be a piece of shit to everyone around you?
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, just I'm preparing my role.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Is there... your relationship to veterans, military.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
My dad's a Vietnam vet.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I wanted to go into the Navy to fly jets. I feel like I'd always had this calling to serve that I never went in the direction of wearing the uniform. And because of it, I was like, well, how do I serve that community? How do I actually take what I've done as an actor with the platform that I have and give back to that community? So it started, one of my agents that works on the foundation side of an old agency I was with, she pulled me into a USO tour. And so I went to Iraq and Afghanistan in 2008.
What's that like?
Fucking war.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
is
listen.
Scary?
I think there were moments that were real.
Mm-hmm.
Very real, you know. I almost fell out of a Black Hawk.
Jeez.
The doors were open, and I was just taking photographs of all kinds of stuff. We were in Afghanistan, and I remember we had just gotten back from a sortie out to FOB Tillman, Forward Operating Base Tillman,
mm-hmm.
named after Pat Tillman. And right when our helicopters landed on base, they were loading up caskets, two caskets, onto a C-17 to send them back to Delaware, you know, Dover, pass through where all of our KIA go.
What did that feel like, seeing that?
Real. Real. Because, like, you know, you're in a desert that kind of looks like Arizona. You know, Iraq looks like Arizona. Afghanistan kind of looks like Palm Springs. But... you know, you're in a war zone and you're watching a lot of Americans and other forces that are partnering with America, you know, fight some injustices and stuff over there. And you're seeing civilians that live over there. And it's just a very real experience. And I was a spectator to a degree. You know, if you're not wearing the uniform, like, you're spectating.
Yeah.
The ones that are wearing the uniform are like, they're really doing the work over there.
They're in battle. Right.
They're in battle, or they're in support roles, or they're in theater. Like they are there in the capacity of representing the U.S. Anyhow, I went to Iraq and Afghanistan. And after that, I met some other veterans kind of that had done their duty. A guy named Paul Rykoff, who started and ran the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And Todd Bowers, who was in between deployments, staff sergeant in the Marine Corps. And I just got to be friends with them. And then I was like, well, how can I be involved? You know, and when I hesitated using the word spectator, I feel like there are real spectators from my side of things that want that experience of war without actually having that experience of
war. What do you mean? Oh, you mean like they talk the talk but don't walk the walk or something?
They want to go and they want to see what it's all like and they want to be protected. And when they get home, they don't do anything with that information.
Okay. They want to just voyeuristically or something, right?
Kinda. And I've seen that a lot. You know, it's like, it's a very rare thing to be invited into the military space in whatever capacity you are, going to a war zone or going to Walter Reed Hospital or spending time with Gold Star families. Like, it's a commitment that you don't ever walk away from.
Yeah.
So when I say spectator, I would see like my early entrance into that world of working with veterans groups or active duty or whatnot, a lot of actors, musicians, athletes that were there.
Yeah.
But when that experience was done, that tour was done, that you know, meet at the hospital was done, they kind of like fuck off back into their lives.
So what'd you do differently?
Stayed involved. I still do what I can for Gold Star family. So anybody that doesn't know what a Gold Star family is, it's a family member, mother, daughter, husband, wife, child of someone who's killed in combat. You get that designation of being a Gold Star family member. That community, you know, is experiencing the worst of what war is. They're lost. Their loved ones are lost. And because of that, you know, the nation owes them a great deal of gratitude and support, financial or other. And I think there are some systems in place that fail those families in times. So I do some work with some groups that and some more individuals that have a high impact on those families, staying involved with that. Also trying to get a war memorial built, a Vietnam War Memorial. There's Korean War Memorials, World War II, World War I. The Global War on Terrorism, there's finally going to be a memorial, but wow, that was an uphill battle to get. Like, there were senators in the Senate that were going against bills that would give a proper placement. Mm-hmm. I won't name any names, but, you know, talking to Senator Manchin and having him block something, it's like, well, all right, dude, that's not right. I'm going to go to Twitter and I'm going to go on the news. I'm going to go do some stuff and, you know, not to be antagonistic, but to let people in my sphere know that you're blocking this. And of course he relents. And of course, placement happens at the on the National Mall where it should be, you know? So it's like, just for me, it's staying active. And the job, the task, the mission is always going to change. But for me, giving support to the military, which is apolitical, which is for the people, for the nation, supports the Constitution, I'm like, I always just want to do what I can to serve that group.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
I want to say congratulations. You got married.
I did.
How'd you know you found the one?
You know, it's like when you're in greatness, you just, you know, around somebody great, you just, you get completely enraptured in it. Mm-hmm. So that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's true. Fair. But you did go on a secret wedding, which is cool.
Yeah.
And like, that's exactly what I would do. I'm not going to, you know, hit TMZ up about it. That's kind of badass that you were just cool. We're going to go do this and I'm not going to like let you guys in. Right.
I mean, listen, you know, this kind of goes back to the conversation we had earlier, you know, like what's mm-hmm. the downside? Everybody wants to know your business. So are private moments really that private? Are personal moments really that personal?
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel that even someone in my position who's in the public eye, a public figure, when you say celebrity, public figure,
sure,
we have a right to privacy as well.
Yeah.
We have a right to have moments be sacred, to be private, to be only exclusively for the people that need to be there, family, you know? So I'm grateful that we were able to do that for ourselves, to enjoy our day. And of course, you know, being out with my wife, it's like people are going to see us and people are going to dig for information, especially the first time. And that's what it is, you know? And so to put out one or two wedding photos to just be like, hey, here's me and my beautiful wife who I love very much, who I'm very excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that satisfies people.
Well, I'm happy for you, man.
Thanks,
man.
That's
awesome.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I'm a very lucky man.
That's awesome. Do you feel like sometimes people, like some people in society mm-hmm. sort of get confused about this celebrity or person of interest or public figure, and they kind of don't respect the privacy thing?
Absolutely.
Or that it gives them permission somehow to just omit it?
Well, it's also too, you know, we in the public, we have massive targets on our back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just are constantly taking shots at us. You know, people can have a comment about me being married or me being single or me hanging out with my buddies or whatever, walking my dog.
Yeah.
Everyone can have a comment, but also like I can't have a comment about anything, you know? So it's interesting when people think that the privacy of someone in the public is kind of like out the window, but.
Yeah, like you threw it away or something.
Yeah.
Right?
You owe it to somebody.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, people will deny, you know, that I'm even married. And it's like, nah, I'm pretty fucking married.
It's like, I promise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel the need to protect relationships like that from?
Absolutely.
Like a duty that, hey, I'm not going to have this tainted by any of this.
I've had moments in my career where, let's just say, someone who was a fan of my work crossed the line and tried to engage my parents.
Really?
And my parents having to, or not quite understanding someone's intentions, or I'd have to kind of pull them inside a sphere of protection, you know? So you do the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
You give very little information. You still try and be charming and fun and you know, have a good conversation with people. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, there's a public persona and there's a private persona.
Mm-hmm.
And I often think that the public persona, when was the last time you went to Disneyland?
It's been a couple of years.
But when you were there, you probably went on the Haunted Mansion ride, right?
Well, of course.
Okay. You know, at the very end of the ride, when you're sitting in your Doom buggy and there's a green ghost that sits next to you?
Yeah.
That's what celebrities like. Yeah. Imagine a green ghost follows you everywhere you go. Everywhere you go, looks like you, talks like you, sounds like you, but it's not you.
Mm-mm.
That's the public face and persona.
Yeah.
And then there's who you are as a person, fundamentally, human being. That's who you get to be when the cameras don't roll, when the audio isn't recording, and you just like hang out across the table from your buddy from a long time, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like there's something you always give to the public, but then there's got to be something you hang on to for yourself entirely, entirely. So, and I think a lot of that I've really tried to maintain is my relationships, my family, because they're for me.
Well, I mean, I think you do an amazing balancing job, man.
Thanks, man.
I look up to you.
I appreciate that.
You know, you're doing it the best.
Thanks,
you,
man. I was going to say one other thing actually to that, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important for performers to, in a way, minimize who they are.
What do you mean?
Live a smaller life in who they are, because then when somebody's watching you in the role you're playing, somebody's watching Jack on This Is Us, they're watching Jack. They're not watching Milo play Jack. They're watching Jess on Gilmore Girls. They're not watching Milo play Jess. Peter, Robert Balboa Jr.,
mm-hmm.
Chad. You know, the characters are more believable when people get a bit of a blank slate from you, the
like
human.
Like a mystique? Or
you can, I guess you can call it
or,
a mistake.
Or what is it for you?
For me, like I just try not to give too much. Like
yeah.
I said, there's a reflection of who I am fundamentally, just being a decent person out in the world, try and be kind, try
yeah.
and be positive, right? But beyond that, you know, where my real positivity that I was raised with comes from, nobody knows that. Where my real kindness that I was raised with, nobody knows where that comes from.
Yeah.
I know where that comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So,
or are you saying basically that it has its perks because you care about your acting, right? And
yeah.
you want to get better at that craft.
Of course.
And you found that that's been able to help you?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It has. There are many perks, very little downside. Honestly, very little downside. I mean, listen, it's like, you know, like I said, imagine walking around in life and people want to be nice to you. The downside is not everybody's telling you the truth.
Yeah.
You know? Because people don't want to disappoint you or be on your bad side. It's, no, tell me the truth. Just tell me
yeah.
the truth always.
So you're more on a swivel. You're a little bit more.
Yeah, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, you understand, or you can, you get to a point or a place where you realize you can be incredibly impactful to an individual or a group. And if you do your best to leave a positive, lasting impression on people that they will then put forward, well, then you've been a good human being. Be a good human being first, and then be a fucking kick-ass artist second.
Yeah. Last question for you.
Okay.
What are you looking forward to the most in the rest of your life right now?
That's a hard question, Payne.
You have 10 seconds.
I've got 10 seconds?
Or it doesn't come true.
Oh, man.
Just kidding.
Dinner. I'm going to go
just
home.
Just one dinner?
I'm going to go home and have dinner
with yeah,
my wife.
Yeah, you're like, I'm so
that's what
hungry,
I'm looking forward
starving
to.
Right here.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, touche. We should eat dinner too.
Yeah, I know, right? I think it's about that time.
It's about that dinner time. Hey, man, this has been a blast.
Brother.
Thank you so much.
Always good
cheers,
seeing you, man.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of people out there looking for her. West Beach, all the way to the rivers, and all the way up through that country. They haven't found a body. They haven't found anything. The evidence is gone.
You sure about that? What does that tell you?
She's not there. I don't know the parameters of who she was with or what, you know. But I do know that she was supposedly last seen with this guy. They found her things in his tent.
Did you ever come in contact with the person?
Not that I recall. I'm not saying I didn't see him or something, you know. I just heard she was with this guy. I don't know who the guy was on the beach or something. I just heard.
Do you know who that guy may have been?
No. I don't know the guy's name. I don't even. I'm just an old man.
Yeah.
And I think logically. I'm a logical thinker. She could have wandered into the wrong tent. Some people don't like that. I mean, you're not going to drive down the damn beach and just see somebody walking along and jump out and kill them. That don't make any sense either. You must have had some interaction with her. And the people on that beach is the ones that had interaction with her. Where the guy went, I don't know.
But he's not here.
No, he's not, no. I don't know where he went, but I do know that if I was an investigator, I'd be on his ass like stink on shit.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcast, created and hosted by Payne Lindsay. For Tenderfoot TV, executive producers are Payne Lindsay and Donald Albright. Co-executive producer is Mike Rooney. For iHeart Podcast, executive producers are Matt Frederick and Alex Williams, with original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Additional production by Mike Rooney, Dylan Harrington, Sean Nerney, Dayton Cole, and Gustav Wild for Cohedo. Production support by Tracy Kaplan, Mara Davis, and Trevor Young. Mixing and mastering by Cooper Skinner and Dayton Cole. Our cover art was created by Rob Sheridan. Check out our website, talkingtodeathpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Talking to Death. This series is released weekly, absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, you can subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to tenderfootplus.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.